Blog Talk Radio.
All right, ladies, buckle up. It's showtime.
If anyone wants to call someone an Uncle Tom, first read the book. Uncle Tom was a heroic figure. Uncle Tom stood up against the Democrat Simon Legree, who wanted to enslave those people. He stood up and he fought, and he was willing to die for freedom. So anyone who wants to call me or any other African American an Uncle Tom doesn't know what they're talking about, because you don't know what an Uncle Tom is. You're a Sambo, you're a Quimbo, you're working for the Democrats. That's the party of slavery, and you're continuing the enslavement of our people.
What's the dealio? Priest on the radio. We're live. You know we are. 1 minute after the hour right here on July the 17th, 2012. So, there's a lot we could talk about, but of course, I would be a moron if I didn't get into the backlash behind the comments by the President of the United States. It would be ridiculous for me not to deal with this subject matter, because it is a it's an issue now, and it's an issue with American business owners, and it's an issue to the point where people are suggesting that right now this is going to define the rest of the race, be it just some 112 days away. Even our good friend Bill O'Reilly is chiming in on this. And a lot of businesses are out there doing that. So I want to play a little bit of what we played yesterday and how this whole thing got started. It has always been a narrative of the liberals, the Democrats, that in order for you to tell people that, you know, that government in essence is responsible for your wealth, you know, it's their way of saying you've got to do your part by giving us more of your money. We made it happen for you. You didn't do it on your own. So there are other people out there who are poor, who are impoverished. They already believe in order for them to survive, they need the federal government. They need more programs. This is, of course, very prevalent in the African-American community. They need more government. When are you going to bring us a program? You know, we get to get programs out here to teach our kids how to live. You got to educate. You have a program, you effing moron. It's called the school. That's a perfect program. Yeah, but the schools ain't teaching us nothing. Well, why are you out there protecting these teachers that don't do anything for you? When we try to get rid of unions, you back them, and NAACP does it every year, backs these teachers that don't care about your kids in a government-run education system that is failing your children. And the unions who back these same politicians that you want this help from. So you're an effing moron. So you have a program. You don't do anything with it. But what do you want? More programs? You want somebody else to build you a building to teach you how to be an entrepreneur? Is that what you need? Really? You need somebody to come in and teach you how to be an entrepreneur? Do you know how to save money? Do you know how to open up a bank account? Can you leave the barbecue chips and the hero sandwich alone? Huh? Can you put down the 40 of OE for 1 minute? So you can learn how to start your own business. You really need a program to do that? How about grabbing your Obama phone, going online, and just looking online to find out how is it you could become an entrepreneur? Everything is online now. Look it up. That's all you have to do. Don't be a bum. Just do it. But because of these people thinking that the government is what they need to be successful in order to survive. It's easy for them to believe this narrative that Obama and Elizabeth Warren are talking about, saying that, you know, hey, you didn't get that on your own. We helped you. The government, we helped you. So you should give back to us a little bit so we can spread the wealth around. That's what it is. I'm going to play for you what Elizabeth Warren says. Just understand what it is that I just said. And you get where it is that I'm going, but just listen to what she says. You know, you're lucky that the government was there, the police was there, the fire there. Nobody burned your ish down. Nobody came in. No, the Midnight Marauders didn't come in and take over your stuff because you had government around to protect you. If I built a small business, right? Think about that. If I built a small business, oh my God, it just came to me. I'm going to use Tony Montana from Scarface in this scenario. Tony Montana didn't need, remember, he had legitimate businesses. He was a drug dealer, but he had legitimate businesses. You know, he had little front operations. I know he was doing illegal business, but think about it. People couldn't come into his businesses and rob him because he paid armed guardsmen to guard outside. Unfortunately, Sosa had more guns, but you get my point. You protect your business by hiring private security. You install your building with fire hoses, with sprinkler systems. I mean, if it was just up to the government to protect you, you wouldn't need all those things, right? Building codes, health codes, all of those codes that you got set up there. The government isn't supplying you with that. If they're regulating you. They're regulating you into keeping your business afloat. Got to have this, got to keep the health code, got to make sure I have this many people in the building, this many people can only ride the elevator at one time. It's all regulated. This isn't help. This is regulation. I can't put that building up until I follow building codes. And I got to go through the government to make sure I can get that goddamn, that license to build in this area. And don't forget the real estate crap that I have to go through in order to get that building up there. And what kind of building you're going to be burning charcoal in this bitch? Well, we can't have you doing that. So you have to make sure you sign this waiver and this legal document. The government didn't help you do all that. These are all the things you have to do before you can even build up the business. And the hell, if that doesn't cost you a crap load of money. And then after you spend all that money, oh, you need people to work in those offices. And then you got to have somebody interview each and every one of you. You're probably the first one that's got to interview the first couple of people you bring in. Owner of the company. Government supplied you with that? With the interview? What did you have to do? Oh, you had to put an ad in the newspaper. Oh, you had to pay for that. Look at all this stuff that the government's not providing you. Let's listen to this broad again.
There is nobody in this country who got rich on his own. Nobody. You built a factory out there, good for you. But I want to be clear, you moved your goods to market on the roads the rest of us paid for.
Yep.
You hired workers the rest of us paid to educate. You were safe in your factory because of police forces and fire forces that the rest of us paid for. You didn't have to worry that marauding bands would come and seize everything at your factory and hire someone to protect against this because of the work the rest of us did. Now look, you built a factory and it turned into something terrific or a great idea. God bless. Keep a big hunk of it. But part of the underlying social contract is you take a hunk of that and pay forward for the next kid who comes along.
I don't owe you a crap. I don't owe you a damn thing. Now, here's, again, President Obama doubling down on it. But I'm going to watch you how smart-ass punked out.
If you've been successful, you didn't get there on your own. You didn't get there on your own. I'm always struck by people who think, well, it must be because I was just so smart. There are a lot of smart people out there. It must be because I worked harder than everybody else. Let me tell you something. There are a whole bunch of hard-working people out there. If you were successful, somebody along the line gave you some help. There was a great teacher somewhere in your life. Somebody helped to create this unbelievable American system that we had that allowed you to thrive. Somebody invested in roads and bridges. If you got a business, that you didn't build that. Somebody else made that happen. The internet didn't get invented on its own. Government research created the internet so then all the companies could make money.
Enough. All right, enough of that. You didn't build that? And, you know, this argument about there are other smart people out there, there are other hardworking people out there. Well, my question as a business owner would be, well, Mr. President, why the F aren't they rich? Why aren't they wealthy? Why don't they have their own business? If they're so smart and they're so hardworking, what's the problem? Remember, you created the roads. You created the internet. You created the infrastructure for them to be, for me to be successful. Those things are accessible to those bums too. That would be my argument. My argument would be, what's your point there? How brilliant are you? You went out there and wrote a book. Now you're worth a little over $5 million. Are you going to say that the infrastructure helped you read and write? I guess so. I guess you owe your teachers that money then. Perhaps you should give some money over to Indonesia, where you went to kid when went to school when you were seven. Perhaps that. Perhaps Indonesia is owed a line of credit on your behalf to chuck over them maybe a couple of $100 for some of those people living in a rice box. Perhaps. Now, this is what he had to say today after all the backlash. And this is what I hate about politicians. It's very rare. Newt Gingrich is one of the few that will never, ever back down from the claims that he makes. You know that whole food stamp president debacle? Well, it wasn't even a debacle. It was a whole crap, you know, sandwich as far as liberals concerned. He's talking to blacks. Well, whatever. Point still remains. Now, here's President Obama changing his mind about what he said yesterday. Or that we
said this. If you've got a business, you didn't build that. Somebody else made that.
I apologize. I'm screwing up my audio like for the past 2 days. This is what Obama said today. That was wrong.
There's some things we do better together. And we rise or fall as one nation. That's what I believe. That's what our history tells us.
So now he's on the soft stuff. You know, before it was very defiant. You didn't build that. You didn't do that. You didn't do nothing. You didn't do anything. We made that happen for you. Now it's the whole, you know, kumbaya, my lord, kumbaya.
There's some things we do better together.
Help me, please.
And we rise or fall as one nation. That's what I believe. That's what our history tells us.
That's what our history tells us. I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. Oh, my God. There are so many people who are mad right now. I was just trying to say that you don't understand. I was really trying to say something much more profound than the way that it came out. You know, let me tell everybody from the bottom of my heart, I didn't mean it. I didn't mean it. Please, you know, okay, you have to understand what it is that I was trying to say here. This is really what I was trying to say.
I just want to say, you know, can we all get along? Can we get along? Can we stop making it horrible for the older people and the kids? And
I'm sorry. That's what he's sounding like. Now, I hate to say it, but, you know, that's a straight punk ass. You know what you said and you know what you meant. Now, I got to play Romney's response. And I think this, to me, was like the most resonating comment that he could make, because Romney doesn't even have to say anything. It's just repeat the president's words. And you can hear the reaction from people just by hearing it. Listen to what he just reads it.
He said this: if you've got a business, you didn't build that. Somebody else made that happen. To say something like that is not just foolishness. It's insulting to every entrepreneur, every innovator in America. And it's wrong.
They went nuts. And the crowd goes wild. Standing ovations. Real Talk Blancers is doing their Fat Tuesday show today. They're doing their Fat Tuesday show right now, which is generally a news program. JC, can you get on the horn for me real quick? JC, you there?
Yep, right here. What's up?
You know what we got to do. Come on. This is an epic day. Let's at least spend 5 minutes with Real Talk Blancers. Get them on the line, and we'll see how they respond to this President Obama. I know what they're going to say. I don't have to tell anybody what these guys are going to say. They're going to agree. But let's just get them on the horn and see whether or not they're willing to respond to this. And I put an amount of money on it, folks. These Negroes are going to say, yes, you didn't build that. They're going to say it. They're going to say, yes, they didn't build it. JC, see if we can get them on the line. They're going to say, no, you didn't build that. Now, see, again, this is very evident within the black community because they believe that the government should be in charge of everything. They don't even get the concept of freedom. Now, slavery is a very interesting thing when it comes to, in respects or regards to the African-American people. You see, this is the reason why blacks can constantly tell each other, you're always going to be a nigger. This is the reason why they always say that. It's because in their minds, they are always slaves. Always. So when slavery comes around, when slavery is in front of their eyes and it impedes their growth, they don't care. Because in essence, they feel someone's taking care of them. It is a slave mentality. This is a true slave mentality, that someone will take care of them even though they're abusing them. You see what I'm saying? It's almost like the battered wives syndrome. You know, here is a group of people who will constantly keep you in poverty and keep saying, don't worry, tomorrow I'll get you. Don't worry about it. We're working on it tomorrow. Think of how they deal with President Obama. Will I am makes the greatest freaking slaves comment I've ever heard in my entire life. No one said it was going to happen overnight. Nobody said it was going to happen overnight. He's not a magic man. Slave mentality. Giving your oppressor the pass. Yeah, he beat me, but sometimes he treat me good, too. That's all it is. That might be hard for some people to realize, but it's the slave mentality. Yeah, he beat me, but sometimes he treat me good. Sometimes he don't make me eat the chicken scraps. Sometimes I get good chicken. He don't be beating me every day. Sometimes he let me roam around by myself and I get a taste of being free, but I got to come back. That is a slave. They'll never tell you. They know that this is going on in their community. They know that this is happening to them. But they're always going to be slaves. And I think JC is looking for the number. JC, is that what you're doing? Let's see if he's still on the mic or is he on the... Ah, okay, all right, he's working on it right now. Okay. So, we're going to get the Real Talk glances on here. And I'm going to play an audio bit for them that I was going to save for later. And there are some people out there, I know you're listening because our numbers have been up for, a lot of weeks now. So I know there are more and more people out there listening. A lot of people don't like to call radio shows, but I would like to hear from some Negroes on this subject. You know, I know Michael probably called in later, and I'm sure Edward will probably call in later in the next hour, but I want some real Negroes on this. This is why I'm getting a Real Talk glances on this. I'd like to understand what this slave mentality is all about. See, probably because I understand slavery, probably because Mike and Edward, we understand slavery better than most of these people who claim to know their own history. And we can see slavery a mile away. We can see an oppression a mile away, what true oppression is. We can see it and feel it a mile away. And so, it's frightening that when it's right in front of Negroes, they ignore it. And I want to play this, I'll play this audio, and I might play it back again. I might play a second time for a Real Talk Blanchers guy. But this is from the O'Reilly Factor last night, a conversation between Bernard Goldberg and Bill O'Reilly.
Now, the percentage of out of wedlock births among black Americans was 25% in 1965. Was that a purveyor of BernardGoldberg.com? Mr. Goldberg. So the Reverend clearly didn't want to address that.
Yeah, and I'm tempted to say understandably, but I think it's embarrassing. 72.5% out of wedlock birth rate in America today.
For African Americans.
For African Americans. That's
right.
Embarrassing. And, you know, in the entire recorded history of the planet, there has never been a greater voluntary abandonment of men from their children than there is today in black America. Never. I mean, when men went off to war, they had to go up to war. That wasn't voluntary. But never as great a voluntary abandonment of children by their fathers than in black America today.
Why do you think that's happening?
Well, I think it's happening for, if I had to pick the most important reason, it's fatherlessness.
So it perpetuates itself. You don't have a father, then you do the same thing.
You've said this in the past. It creates chaos. It creates a chaotic situation. That's one of the reasons you have so many people killing themselves in Chicago.
I know, but here's my problem as a historian, coming at it from a historical point of view. 1960 to 65 was a time in America where there was all kinds of civil rights problems, all right? I actually write extensively about this in Killing Kennedy, which is coming up. The black out-of-wedlock birth rate back then was 22 to 25%.
Right.
And this was the roughest part.
Exactly.
Okay. It's tripled now. Tripled. Why?
One of the reasons, well, I'll tell you why in a second. One of the reasons that the black community attributes to this, black civil rights leaders, is racism. Well, in 1940, when there was a lot of racism in the United States, the out-of-wedlock birth rate in black America was 19%. Then in 1965, as you said, it was 65%. 25%. This coincides with the beginning of the Great Society welfare state. From 1965 until today, it's gone up geometrically. So that's what's happened. The government became the father. Let me make one point that's very important to me. Willie Brown said earlier in the program that politicians should go to various constituencies, the black community, for instance, and say, this is what I'm going to do for you. That's not going to happen because Democrats will never speak honestly to black people because their white liberal guilt gets in the way, and Republicans won't speak honestly either because they don't have the courage to.
They don't want to be accused of being.
It was a fascinating interview just for the reason that, and why I loved it more than anything. It was fascinating because Bernard Goldberg said what needed to be said, which was most important, was that black people are not being told the truth. Republicans can't do it because they're always going to be viewed as racist. And Democrats won't do it because, you know, this, they need what would be considered, in my view, a guaranteed underclass. A guaranteed underclass. We have to keep them down so that they constantly need. They constantly are in need of something. This is the way that it works. It's sad, but it's absolutely true. There's some more to this that I want to play, where Bernard talks about what Romney should have said. Hold on, what's up?
Yeah, no, they're not ready. They're interviewing some guy right now that does graphics for shirts. They still got me on hold. They have no idea that I'm even there. They're broadcasting from some cruise ship, or part of the team is. They're talking about something about the who's the old extra light skin, the old fart in the morning. What's his name? Tom Joyner.
Uh huh.
Yeah, I think one of them is they're on a Tom Joyner crew or some crap like that. But
they're on another radio host cruise.
I think so. But they're right now, like I said, they're talking to somebody who does graphic art shirts.
Okay, all right. So they're having a boring interview. Good. So they're
pretty much basically.
Yeah, so they're having a boring interview. All right, well, we'll take a break right now, okay? And we'll wait like the next 6-7 minutes, see if we can get them back on the air, seeing if we can get them to talk about this. But I got plenty of other stuff to talk about. What's scary enough, I'm actually going to talk about the Olympics, and I never talk about these things. I never talk about these things. So we'll get into that. Stick around. We'll be back. Where you are, don't go anywhere. Reese on the Radio returns in a moment right here on blogtalkradio.com.
The Obama attack machine has started, spending millions to sling mud or oil at Mitt Romney. Why? Because in the 5 states where Obama's attacking Romney, gas prices have roughly doubled. But Obama's mud can't cover up his failed energy policies, policies that are hurting small businesses and working families. America deserves solutions, not attack ads covering up Obama's failures. 4 years of failed leadership are all we can afford. Send a message.
Hey guys, I'm Jordan Sparks.
I'm Chase Crawford.
Hey, what's up? It's Usher.
Hi, I'm Rachel Bilson.
I'm Hayden Christensen.
I'm Peyton Manning.
Hey, we're Fall Out Boy.
I'm Jared Archuleta.
I'm Corbin Blue.
I'm Kristen Bell.
And we're the Jonas Brothers.
And I promise you, none of these people listen to my show. But here's some people who do.
Hey, Reese. I don't think you're a buffoon.
Thank you, dear. George, you're Robert Reese.
Hi there, Reese.
Hello, George.
Please let me do the talking today.
George, you're going to be brief.
I respect what you said because you know something, you're being honest.
Hey, I'm glad that you're bringing up what's most important, and that is the issues and where people stand and what they have for experience.
It's Reese on the Radio, weekdays right here on blogtalkradio.com.
Mr. Speaker, the President of the United States. States.
This is the real state of our union. But you won't hear stories like those at President Obama's address tonight. The unemployed don't get tickets to sit next to the First Lady. Instead tonight, the President will do what he does best. He'll give a nice speech.
The idea of America endures.
A lot of memorable phrases in it.
That our future is hopeful.
But he won't give you the hard numbers.
Our journey goes forward. In the state of our union history.
4 years ago, we measured candidate Obama by his hopeful promises and his slogans. Today, President Obama has amassed an actual record of debt, decline, and disappointment. I'd use the State of the Union to lay out an agenda that will get our country back on track and get our fiscal house in order. We need to nominate someone who is an experienced leader, who has the qualities of leadership, the character, the judgment, the seriousness, the sobriety, the capacity demonstrated time and time again as a leader to help guide our party at a critical time and make sure that we hold on to the House, that we capture the Senate, and that we get back the White House and restore to America what is rightfully ours, a great nation, united, free, and prosperous for our kids and for their kids. Thank you so very much.
There's Dr. Oz, there's Dr. Phil, there's Dr. Drew, there's Dr. Joy Brown. It seems like everybody's got an opinion, but I'm going to leave it to the real professionals. Call up at 347-308-8701 to give me your take. It's my problem, you deal with it. Right here on Therapy Thursdays on ReSun Radio, on blogtalkradio.com, weeknights on blogtalkradio.com.
President Barack Obama named himself one of the country's four best presidents. Better than George Washington, John F. Kennedy, and even Ronald Reagan. But Mr. President was just being modest. He's in fact America's best president at piling on debt. So good that he has managed to pile on nearly as much debt as all the previous presidents combined. All he needed was just 4 years to outspend 220 years of history. We can't afford four more years of America's best president.
Hey, what's up, guys? It's Reese on the Radio, and you know you can get Reese on the Radio anytime you want by logging on to ReeseOnTheRadio.com. That's right. ReeseOnTheRadio.com gives you all the latest news, all the latest stories that I find interesting, and you can also click on to www.ReeseOnTheRadio.com and listen to archives of my new show, which is on BlogTalkRadio.com. That's right. It's www.ReeseOnTheRadio.com. You can get all the latest news, all the latest events, and anything else happening in Reese's world. It's Reese on the Radio, and I'm back right here on BlogTalkRadio.com.
Come on, players, stop hating. Stop hating. Stop participating. Stop participating. Come on, twinkle, twinkle, baby. Twinkle, twinkle.
Oh, wow.
Was my mic off that entire time?
Yes, it was. Wow.
Sorry about that, folks. I went to a whole entire tribe afterwards. Let me just repeat what it is.
Well,
I
they
said.
Didn't hear any of the any of the the second half either. You were on mute the whole time.
No.
Yes, you were.
I'm so sorry. I wish somebody had
2 days in
a
row, technical difficulties.
I'm having the worst trouble today.
User error.
And, yeah, it's really, really bad now. Now I cannot believe that I just did that. Did they not hear that whole thing?
No, they did not. No one heard it.
Oh, okay, I'm going to play the audio again, just so I can get it right. My apologies.
But there's not much I can do for a community where 72.5% of the people are born out of wedlock. I'm not going to be able to get jobs for a 15-year-old girl who has a baby. I'm not going to be able to find jobs for a young boy.
It would have been a riot if you said
wait a second. Who drops out of school because in some perverse way, taking school seriously is acting white.
Right.
And he should have done that, and he should have said, government can do just so much. You, the venerable members of the NAACP, need to do more than you're doing, and you better be more successful.
Can you imagine if you said that?
Yeah, the press for openers.
Everybody would have killed
you.
Right.
And you know what my answer to that is? So what? So what? You don't do anybody any favors, whether it's the NAACP or any other group, when you don't speak honestly to them. And we don't speak honestly to black people. You've had three or four influential black people on the show over last week and this week. Nobody wants to acknowledge what the problem is.
In Chicago.
Chicago,
right.
Yeah. Nobody wants to say.
And I'm glad you brought that. That's why I said to the Reverend, he's a good man. And he is very concerned about it. The Congress can't do it. The National Guard can't do it. All right. What has to happen is the African American community has to come together and demand that it stop.
Precisely.
And the reason in the long term that it's come to this is because young boys, once they get big enough, don't listen to their mother.
Absolutely.
And if the mother says, don't go out, the young boy says, I'm going out, and I'm going to get in the gang, because they're almost impressed into the gang.
That's precisely the process.
And that's what you have.
And with all the guests you had on in the last few days,
nobody would acknowledge
exactly.
it.
Exactly.
Nobody.
Exactly. And neither will the Democrats, and neither will the Republicans. And just in fairness, white underclass isn't doing a whole lot better. The illegitimacy
it's
rate
parallels. You can see in the white precincts when there's no father present,
right.
The behavior isn't the same
right.
as it is in the black. And the same for the Hispanics.
That's right.
Wait, you can't control young black boys. Young black boys, young white boys, young Hispanic boys are likely going to go wrong if they have no structure.
Right, but that woman that you played a clip of earlier, what are you going to do for me? And Mitt Romney goes to the NAACP and say the schools have failed the children, your children. No, the schools haven't failed their children, and I'm not saying the schools are great necessarily. They have failed the schools. You go to school and you don't want to study because you think that's...
And nobody makes you study.
And nobody makes you study.
Right.
Listen, the one thing I want to leave you with, nothing is going to change in black America for the better as long as you have 72.5% of all the babies born with no father around. It isn't going to change.
All right. Bernie Goldberg, everybody, there it is.
So as I was saying before my technical glitch, was that probably one of the best conversations I heard about race on television in years. In years. I don't think I can't even equate it to the last conversation that I've ever heard on race. But I'd like to congratulate not only the fact that Bill O'Reilly had the conversation, but the fact that Bernard Goldberg was so eloquent and articulate about the issue and why it is a problem within the African-American community. As I was saying before, what you couldn't hear was that there hasn't been any blowback from this, you know, any conversations about, oh, you know, they're having this racist comments on Bill O'Reilly's show. I don't think anybody can argue about one thing that was said about the conversation. I always knew that the number is 70%. Not that 72.5 is, it's not the same number.
Not that it's so much worse.
Yeah, not that
it's
so much
worse,
but it's still a considerable amount. When I look at the number of 72.5%, I'm saying to myself, out of 40 million African Americans in the country, that's an astounding
it's almost
number.
Three-quarters
yeah,
of the African...
Exactly.
Okay, yeah, put it like this. Almost three-quarters of the entire African-American population. Almost three-quarters are having babies out of wedlock.
Well, I like what Bernard Goldberg said about the whole thing about saying that in the history of our world, of our country, there has never been this level of child abandonment.
There hasn't. In the 20s, in the 1920s, I think he said it
was 40s. He said
okay,
40s 40. And 60s and now.
Yeah,
in
the
40s,
40s
he said
it was
20%. 20%.
And then it was 28%.
25% in the 60s, 60 to 65.
Yeah.
And then he goes on to say, look at it at the rate it is now. What I think
from the 1960s
to
we're talking
now.
We're talking
47
years.
Yeah, 47 years. It's tripled.
Yeah.
But here's what I find even more staggering about those numbers, and why that's so relevant to me is Bill O'Reilly makes that valid point. He's like, look, the country has become more progressive. There have been more permissible. There's been more permissible behavior in the country today than there ever was before. Everyone always talks about the good, you know, when anyone talks about the good old days, they always say, oh, you're stuck in the past, it was much more strict, you couldn't listen to rock and roll, you couldn't date a girl who was outside of your color, you couldn't do this, and there were so much rules and regulations. But now there are less rules and less regulations, and certain behaviors not frowned upon. And then you look at that and you go, wait, it was 19% in the 40s, it's 25% in the 60s, and it triples between the Civil Rights Act of 1964 till now? So the whole idea was, let's give African Americans the opportunity to have the civil rights of every American in the country. Now, I'm not even suggesting that we should go back to those days. I'm not saying that we should go back to the days of racism, but we do need to return to the sense of family
values.
We
need to go back to the days of morals. That was the issue.
Absolutely.
No one has any morals. Nobody has that. Nobody, marriage means nothing to people anymore. Having a kid is like going through, getting pregnant, having sex and getting pregnant is like going through the drive-thru and getting a cheeseburger.
The number is 347-308-8701. On the phone with us, of course, our good friend Mike in Florida. Well, how you doing, boss?
You were pretty much, or Bernard Goldberg was spot on when he traced it back to Lyndon Johnson.
Right,
so
the Great Society.
Once the Great Society came in, and I look at it as, yeah, there was a quote from LBJ. I can't pull it up, but the quote was, and this is a little rough language, he said to one of his confidants, if you let me pass this bill, I'll have those niggers voting Democrat for 50 years.
That's exactly what he said.
Okay, and that's what it was. This was a...
Putting them on the plantation. Right, but the whole idea was we got to pass that nigger bill. That's what he called it.
We have that old
we got to pass that bill.
To get people dependent. And, you know, I don't understand the short-sightedness of creating a permanent criminal underclass. I mean, you guys ever see you saw the movie RoboCop, right?
Of course.
Remember when you saw RoboCop and it was set in Detroit? And you said, oh, man, that's really, really far-fetched. That'll never happen.
I didn't know. No, I know. I didn't think that. I looked at Detroit. That's the one thing I always knew as a kid. I knew Detroit was a wasteland. It had been a wasteland when I was a kid. It was a wasteland.
Detroit's not far from meeting Ed 209s on the street right now, man.
Got to be that way. In fact, Chicago is probably going to get there faster.
You know, I mean, I'm looking at a stat right now that, the illegitimacy rate is really crippling to the black community. But if you look at the incarceration rate,
that's
crazy. The incarceration rate in state or federal prison for men, the rate for black men is 4,789 per 100,000.
Yeah.
You know what it is for white men?
Probably less than
736 per 100,000.
Okay, I was going to say less than 800. I thought it was less than 700, to be honest.
And Hispanic men are 1,862 per 100,000. So you combine that with the illegitimacy rate, and it's a death sentence.
But you know what, Mike? The biggest problem with that is that Bernard Goldberg got cut off by Bill O'Reilly when he was saying it. That is that we have a lot of people, not just people in the black community. We also have people who are the black leader, who always equate conservatism or any sort of rationale. They associate it with being white. And that whole, this identification of not being authentically black. When you hear guys like Michael Eric Dyson, who is saying, Michael Eric Dyson saying on air, on MSNBC, on CBS, whatever, when he says that Herman Cain is an Uncle Tom, and his resume, Michael Eric Dyson's resume is he's a University of Pennsylvania professor. So in essence, his pedigree, his background, his resume gives merit to what he says when a guy like Herman Cain speaks. So to the black community, they go, oh, that's one of us who's a professor who's got a PhD calling Herman Cain and Uncle Tom. That legitimizes that claim. And Herman Cain is sitting up there going, I got more money than fucking.
Yeah, and Herman Cain's an entrepreneur.
I got more money than Michael Eric Dyson.
Did you
say
the F word?
Yes, I did.
Wait a minute, Mike. We have a radio foul in the house.
I'm so sorry. I couldn't help it.
Did you hear what he just said?
Did he say the F word?
He said effing.
I'm sorry. But he's got more money than Michael Eric Dyson. He's way more, established than Michael Eric Dyson. But Herman Cain gets – and this guy is from the segregated South in Georgia.
Yeah. Pulled himself up by his bootstraps and was in the Navy and served his country and all that stuff.
Exactly. But and I'm – go ahead, Mike.
I don't know if there's a – sad as it sounds, I don't know if there's a respect for the entrepreneurial spirit in the black community, whether it's white guy or black guy, unless it's a rapper, you've seen all the they're calling them flash mobs that are going on across the country.
I know there was one today, but I couldn't see the video. Whoever the fuck put the video up made it private after they started getting all that attention.
There was one in Jacksonville where 300 youths, I say youths, but you know what I mean, attacked a Walmart at 1 o'clock in the morning and stole a bunch of stuff and did $1,500 worth of damage. But you see it when it hits little mom and pop shops. And little mom and pop shops are the epitome of the entrepreneurial spirit.
Right.
And there's no respect for that at all. They have no consideration for the fact that this is a family trying to feed themselves. It's just we're going to go steal their merchandise and take the Funyuns and screw those people.
Well,
and I don't understand it.
And it's more about, I don't even think it's about them stealing anything. I'm sure a few of them out of the crowd wanted to, benefit off of stealing something. But it's more of, let's go out and cause havoc. It don't matter what you... Huh?
Go ahead, sorry.
I mean, it's the lack of respect for anything in this day and age is ridiculous. Because it's just about causing havoc.
And how terrifying is it for the employees? I mean, can you imagine being in a store and, I don't know, 50 people come into your 7-Eleven and start tearing stuff up? You don't know if they're going to kill you.
They're like terrorists.
Yeah, they're like terrorists.
Right. I always harken back. When I think about those things like those flash mobs, I always go back to the story. I'll never forget it. As a kid, I probably was in junior high school. I'm almost certain I was in junior high. My mom comes home one night. My mom was working the graveyard shift at Dunkin' Donuts up on Hillside Avenue next to the Grand Union.
Yeah.
Mary remembers that well. That's the reason why I gave that description. She worked at that Dunkin' Donuts when we were kids, when I was in junior high.
Well, by Hillside and Franny Lou by the Grand Union?
Yeah, not exactly.
Okay.
That one right there.
That's right.
And,
by PC Richards.
That's right. I remember my mom comes home and I don't know why I was up or how or why I got up, but I know my mom came home and she was literally in a panic. But she got held up at gunpoint at Dunkin' Donuts. And I think the guy just stole a couple of $100, but, you know, she was at the register. And she got held up at gunpoint. I'll never forget the look on my mom's face and how terrified I was at the idea that, oh, my God, my mom may have been, you know, my mom may not have come home tonight.
Yeah, I mean, people like to say, you know, these bleeding heart liberals, when some armed citizen, store owner or whatever shoots somebody, the bleeding hearts always come out and say, well, just give them the money, nothing's going to happen. But that's not the case anymore.
It should never be the case anymore.
These crazy fools will shoot you and then take the money.
That's right, exactly.
Or take the money and then shoot you, even
and
after
he
has
the time.
What's that,
JP?
Leaving no witnesses behind.
That's right.
Well, we had a couple of incidents not far from me in the past few days. They're actually kind of funny. We have these things down here called internet cafes.
Yeah,
but
yeah,
they're
sure.
They're not really internet cafes per se. They're some kind of gambling loophole. They play video poker or something, and they get money put on phone cards, like all the old people hang out there.
Right.
Well, these two
miscreants. They're like a numbers joint?
Kind of. It's some kind of weird gambling deal. I don't really want to go in the place because it's full of, you know, smoking 85-year-olds. Okay.
Right.
But these two guys with, go figure, hoodies, one with a baseball bat and one with a gun, come in and hold all these people at gunpoint. And when one of them turns his back, a 71-year-old guy gets up with a .380 and caps them both.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Didn't kill him.
That is hysterical.
He shot one in the arm and one in the leg and the ass.
Mm.
And the funny part is the Gainesville Sun interviewed the one who got shot in the ass, and he had the audacity to complain. He said, well, my gun was rusted and didn't work. And he'd have to shoot me in the ass when I was on the ground. Really?
Like he should be spared in some sort of way.
Yeah.
The only thing wrong
is that old man should have had a bigger gun.
He had a .380 for crying out loud.
Yeah, he should have had a .45. That's what I carry. And then there was another one in Gainesville, Florida, where some genius named Tavarius or something went to rob one of those gold exchange stores.
Right.
What kind of idiot tries to rob the gold store?
Do you not think
that guy is going to be armed?
Exactly.
And guess who got shot?
Did he die?
Yeah, no, he was wounded.
Well, at least they're wounding him. Hey, look, you know what? That's the difference. Because when these armed lunatics who don't have a right to have a gun are running around shooting people, someone ends up dead and innocently. It's always a bystander. These people who are professionals who go to shooting ranges and have their guns legally, what do? They wound these sons of bitches so that they can face a trial.
Yeah, they incapacitate them so that...
The guy in Gainesville shot him in the leg, and I believe what happened is he didn't mean to shoot him in the leg. I think he was amped up and aimed center mass and pulled low left, which what right-handed people will do under stress, and he shot him in the leg. I think he was aiming for center mass.
Oh, really?
That's easier to hit there. Well, I'll tell you what. My daddy was a cop, and I went through concealed carry training, and the guy told me, keep firing until they stop moving.
Huh. I hear you.
Because dead men tell no tales and they can't sue you.
That's right. All right. Let's take a break. Let's go to the top of the hour after a couple of commercial breaks. I got to get into Michael Johnson. Stick around for a little bit. We'll be right back. It's Reese on the Radio.
Out of respect, they gave him the Nobel Peace Prize without him doing anything, and he took it. He changed healthcare for millions of Americans. even though they like what they have. He says he will tell Iran to quit making nukes and they will stop because he is just that good. To him, the Supreme Court is nothing but an unelected group of people. You want president? He is the president. He picked Joe Biden to be his vice president just to show that he doesn't really need one. He wants us to believe no one else in America would have made the Bin Laden call. He is the most arrogant man in the world. I ultimately get what I want. Stay ignorant, my friends.
Hey, what's up, guys? It's Reese on the radio, and you'd be stunned at some of the people who call up to spend some time with Reese on the radio. He is the godfather of entertainment, Mr. Michael Lohan. Mr. Lohan!
Reese, I have to stop laughing before we continue. I don't know how to respond to this. Am I in the Twilight Zone?
you are in the Twilight Zone. On the phone with us right now on Reese on the Radio is the connoisseur of the Hollywood biz, the father of the famed actress Lindsay Lohan. Mr. Michael Lohan is on the show on Reese on the Radio. Thank you for joining us today, sir.
No, thanks for having me, Reese. This is going to be a lot of fun, I can tell already.
Oh, man, you have no idea how much fun we are going to have today. It's Reese on the Radio, weeknights, right here on blogtalkradio.com.
President Obama promised us his health care law.
Is that?
All right, ladies, buckle up. It's showtime.
All I know is we got 5,000 niggers in this county who ain't registered a vote yet. And as far as I'm concerned, they never will. So you can tell your stiff suits up there in Washington, D.C. that they ain't going to change us one bit. Unless it's over my dead body. Or a lot of dead niggers.
We're back, top of the hour, right here on Reese on the Radio on blogtalkradio.com. It is the 17th of July, 2012. As a lot of people know, I tend to go after the handicapped, but not in a bad way. I just go in an honest way. I go in an honest way about the handicapped. And look, I'm of the ilk that believes that you should treat them with the same amount of respect as everybody else. But I get on them when they start asking for special privileges, but at the same time asking that they be treated like everybody else. So that's the only time I ever start ripping on those who are disabled. Now, I'll give you a perfect example. This happened at Rikers Island. I'm almost certain I told this story before, but there was a guy who was locked up. He had one prosthetic leg. He had titanium from the knee down. And I remember guys were going up to get seconds for lunch. And as I was getting up, and he was cool with me. He hung out with me all the time. He was a crackhead. He was. He admitted it.
He was a crackhead.
He admitted it. So I'm getting up to go grab some extra, and
he can hide his crack in his titanium leg.
He probably could. But, so anyway, I'm getting up to go grab some extra food, and he says, Yo, Reese, do me a favor. Can you go up there and go get me some extra? I guess we were having hamburgers or something. Can you go up there and go get me some extra? And so I looked him right in his face, and I said, no. And he was like, why not? I said, you ain't got polio. You just got a titanium leg. You want us to treat you like the rest of us? You get your ass up and you go get your own food. Everybody looks at me like, everyone's laughing. He's like, oh, man, come on, Reese, that's cold. I'm like, that's not cold. You can walk, right? He goes, yeah, I can walk. And what are you telling me to go up and get something for you? You are just as able-bodied as me. You want me to treat you like you're just like me? I'm going to treat you just like you're like me. You get your ass up and go get yourself some extra food. And that's what I said to him. Now, this one's a little tricky. If you haven't heard this story, it hasn't created a firestorm, but there's been some controversy. Michael Johnson, famed sprinter, won gold and medals. I know he won some other medals in the 96 and the 2000 games. He's a phenomenon. I think if I'm almost certain, this is the same guy who wore the gold sneakers.
Yes.
Back in the day. So anyway, the story goes like this. The American winner of the Olympic gold medals in the 400 meter in 1996 and 2000 was talking specifically about a runner by the name of Oscar Pistorius, a South African known as Blade Runner. While he stressed that he considers Pistorius, who has been allowed to compete in the London Games in the able-bodied 400 meter, as a friend, the Dallas-born sprinter revealed that he considers the principle of disabled competitors lining up alongside those without specifically developed limbs flawed. When asked at a Times event whether he thought Pistorius' inclusion was political correctness gone mad for an inspiring human story, the 44-year-old said, "I think it's both. I know Oscar well, and he knows my position. My position is that because we don't know for sure whether he gets an advantage from the prosthetics that he wears, it's unfair to the able-bodied competitors." Now, he wears those sort of kangaroo-like springboards at the bottom of his feet.
I would think that he would get.
And, you know, that's them there. Now, I'm going to have to go with Michael Johnson on this. Is that, look, that metallic spring, the bone can't do what those metallic springs can do.
Nope.
I mean, you know what I mean? It's like, sure, it takes a lot of upper body strength and all that other stuff, but you can bounce on those things. I mean, I think if you bounce correctly on those things, you can do somersaults and probably, you know, move an air conditioner from the fourth floor. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I've never had them on, but I've seen those guys with those, you know, like those jumpers in Cirque du Soleil. They have those little springboards that they pop up in the air and they do the somersaults and stuff.
Yeah,
these things look like that.
Well, look at his stride in comparison to their stride.
Well, yeah, exactly.
Look at how much further out he is than they are.
Well, these guys have to bend their knees in order to run, and his
extended.
Is just going extended. He's completely extended. And so I think that to some degree, he has an unfair
advantage.
And his advantage.
Other knee is so, I mean, look at how his other foot is totally bent back.
Right. I mean, he
so he is clearly almost like doing a split when he
is
running.
Right, when he's running. I don't.
That's how far, that would be like his reach with his legs.
I don't believe that he should be allowed to run in the 400-meter competition because I believe, like Michael Johnson says, it sounds to me like he's got an unfair advantage. I mean, it looks unfair to me when I look at it, and I would think that something that metal in some way would push this thing to some, would push his body a little further and a little faster, is what it is that I'm saying. I think it pushes it further. I think it pushes him faster. I think that he has, of course, the recoil is probably, I don't know, maybe a half a step, maybe even a full step faster than a regular sprinter who's got to deal with things like a hamstring, who's got to deal with things like, you know, a Charlie horse in the calf. This guy's got no real calf to speak of.
The flex of the feet.
Yeah, the flex of the feet. I mean, he's not using real body parts, at least below the calf.
Well, he's using real body parts. He's just lacking.
He's lacking what I consider the most significant part, and that's the shin, the calf, and the foot, for crying out loud. They're being replaced by metal. Am I off the wall here? Aren't these things sort of work? Don't they work a little bit like springboards?
You're totally off, and I'll tell you why.
Okay. All right, good. I'm glad there's some opposition here.
Oscar Pistorius holds the world record for a Paralympic athlete at 45.07 seconds in the 400 meter. That is over a second slower than the 10th fastest. Men's 400. in history.
So you're suggesting that
I think
you said it's a half a second slower than the 10th fastest?
Over a second slower.
Okay, over a second slower.
Right. The 10th fastest 400 is Angelo Taylor in June 2007. He ran it in 44.05. And Pistorius' best is 45.07. So that's over a second slower.
Well, maybe he's just slow.
If he can run faster than other people to get on that Olympic team, I don't think you can say that a guy with no feet who's having to deal with prosthetic has an advantage. There's no motors in him.
Well, okay,
if anything, that dude's an inspiration.
Okay, well, you believe that he's an inspiration, but let me ask you this.
Plus, he's white, and it's good to see white sprinters.
Okay, fine. Well, let me ask you this. Do those prosthetics give him a – let's say if he were playing basketball – Would he have a vertical advantage?
I don't know how they work. They're carbon fiber, but you got to remember that, you know, the human calf muscle is just a spring too.
Well, yeah, I know. I'm well aware of that. But my point is that this. I mean, I would love to see whether or not this guy can get airborne with these, you know, with these springs, you know, with these metal pieces under him. Because that to me, my question would be, look. Bounce up and down. Let's see whether or not you've got a 4-inch vertical or a 7-foot vertical. You know,
well,
can
I'll tell you what's strange. If you look at the top 10, right, the top 10 fastest, 9 out of those 10 are all black guys from America. There's only one white guy in the top 10. His name is Jeremy Warriner, and he ran it in 43.45. But he's fast. But the other guys... I don't think this guy's prosthetics make up for the lack of advantage he has genetically.
Okay, so all right, but you know the way these prosthetic works. They curve forward like a
yeah,
foot.
They're carbon fiber is what
right.
they are.
Carbon fiber, they curl, but are these things, am I off base here by saying that these things are very similar to that to that sort of pogo stick thing that we were talking about that you see in Cirque du Soleil?
Well, yeah, I don't know if they're quite that much. I know the thing you're talking about, like the rebounders or whatever.
Yeah.
I just don't know if that advantage can make up for the disadvantage of, you know, having to run on fake legs.
Well, you're saying that he's got balancing issues.
Oh, balance issues, and I'm sure it can't feel good, you know, to have no leg or whatever, be strapped into these things. I say let him run, man. He got his spot on the Olympic team fair and square in South Africa, which can't be an easy thing to do for a white guy.
Yeah, but, you know, let the guy go to the Paralympics. I mean, what does he have to – why make him a part of the able body?
Well, you know, I would say you had a point if an able-bodied guy wanted to go in the Paralympics, but a disabled athlete who proves he's good enough to compete with able-bodied athletes – come on, man. Give the guy a break.
Yeah, but if I would say if, okay, this is what I would consider letting in a disabled person running in the regular Olympics, I would say put it like this. Let's say the runner has autism, okay? He has autism, you know, he's, you know, big Wapner fan, you know what I'm saying, can count two beats. Okay. But, and if his passion is you get him out on the track and he'll run a 400 in 40 seconds, hey, I'm all for that. You know, he runs through, you know, he's a complete Forrest Gump, runs through the damn tape, wins every time, but he's got all the bodies and the limbs, but, you know, he's just, you know, he's autistic. You know, he's not, you know, he's not all there. Okay? So he's not all there. He's not with his butt. He runs, and he runs well. He doesn't bump into other people. He doesn't trip people up. He doesn't run off and chase a squirrel. He's amazing on this thing. That I would consider as far as somebody being disabled and playing, you know, in the regular Olympics. But someone who has to use a device, I think to me, it's a foreign object.
When you see other sprinters cutting their legs off at the knee to get these prosthetics, I'll grant you it may have an advantage. Until then, I think the guy's playing with a lousy deck of cards, and he's really impressive.
I don't know. I think you're giving him too much. I think you're really giving him too much.
If they gave him that much advantage, I'd want to see him beat Michael Johnson's time. And he's not even close.
Well, I know he's not even close to that. But
close to Jeremy Warriner's time, the other white guy.
But look at what Michael Johnson is saying. It's not, Michael Johnson doesn't believe that this guy is going to beat his speed.
Didn't Michael Johnson also say that the reason black guys are better athletes is because the slave masters bred them?
Yes. It was the same thing Jimmy the Greek said. Yeah, he got a lot of heat for that, too.
So it's okay to have a breeding advantage, but not to have some fake legs when you're born with no legs.
I didn't say that. I just said that Michael Johnson's a little off base here. Unless Michael Johnson's going to trace his roots back to, slave runners. You know what I mean? Guys who were, like Kunta Kinte. You know what I'm saying? Who was always.
They should give white guys roller skates to do the 400 to compete against those black guys, okay?
Well, I don't agree there. No unfair advantage. I don't want mechanics of any kind to be a part of.
I think he'd probably rather have his legs.
I'm sure he would, but that doesn't make up for the fact because, so you can't have your legs, so you get to go up against able-bodied people in the regular Olympics?
When you see people say, I want to have a black doctor because he had to work twice as hard to be a doctor, and we reward that kind of trying.
This guy had to work a lot harder to get where he is than
those other guys.
I understand that. I'm not disputing that he has to work hard. I'm not disputing that he's...
Quit hating, Reese. Quit hating.
I'm not hating. I'm not hating. Trust me, you'll know when I'm hating. I'm not hating. But like I said, if this guy wants to prove it to me that he is just as normal or whatever, he's got to do a vertical for me. I want to put him out maybe during the Olympic basketball game. I want to see him dunk. A 10-foot rim. That I want to see. But Edward,
I agree.
Gotta understand where I'm coming from here.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. I think now I don't know how these things work, so I can't say they give him a disadvantage or a disadvantage. But to me, it looks like a person who wouldn't let a person wear swim fins during an Olympic swimming trial. So, I don't think this guy should be allowed to, wear his prosthetics. If he wants to compete with everybody, let him, just run on his the limbs he does have.
Right. In fact, give him, a prosthetic leg, what was Paul McCartney's ex-wife's name?
Damn.
That everybody drew a blank.
Heather Mills.
Heather Mills, yeah. Give her one of those prosthetics. She was on Dancing with the Stars. She didn't have an unfair advantage with a prosthetic leg. That would be on par with if he can learn how to run on those things, that would be fine. But this, what did you say the alloy is made of?
It's carbon fiber.
Carbon fiber. What does that mean, carbon fiber?
It's carbon that's woven together in a laminate with adhesives.
Okay, but let's be honest, Mike. You're going to tell me that this guy can't jump? He can't do a good 6-foot vertical on those things?
Got me, man. I don't know if they're the same as those, Cirque du Soleil legs you see. I mean, the Cirque du Soleil legs have pneumatic cylinders.
They've got to have some bounce to it because he's got to run on them. They don't stand still. They've got to have that rappel.
Okay. I'm on his Wikipedia page.
Uh-huh.
Let's see. In 2007, he did a series of tests at the Cologne Sports University under the guidance of Professor of Biomechanics, Dr. Peter Brueggemann. After 2 days of tests, Brueggemann reported on his findings, said that his limbs used 25% less energy than runners with complete natural legs who run the same speed. And that they led to less vertical motion combined with 30% less mechanical work for lifting the body. This guy said he had considerable advantages, but then somebody else tested him and said that he had disadvantages at the start and acceleration phases of the race.
Okay,
he had no net advantage over able-bodied athletes.
No, I understand it. The start off point on in a race, because the first thing he's got to do is one, he's starting really, really fast. There's probably some nervousness in there on balance, working out your equilibrium because you're not really working with real limbs. I totally get that. But the spring on those things have got to be considerable.
But does that make up for the disadvantages he has in the beginning in the acceleration?
Okay.
Well, and plus, he has no friggin' feet. Let's not gloss over the fact he has no feet.
But
he has no feet, man. He's footless. He's footless and white and competing with black sprinters. Give my boy a break.
I will give him a break. But listen, the guy's got metallic kangaroo feet, okay? Let's be honest.
And Michael Johnson has like 6-foot-long
feet.
Where's
this going to stop? Are they going to let him compete in a long jump next?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Hey, he's just a sprinter, man. He's a quarter miler.
But there could be another guy, you know, in the next Olympics who has the same thing and he wants to do the long jump with his springy feet.
Right, and this guy does a long jump. It's like 15. Oh, my goodness, 15 feet. That's exactly what I'm
As doing. I said, when you see able-bodied athletes amputating their legs so they get an advantage, I'll concede your point.
Well, maybe.
I don't see anybody lying enough to do that.
No, you're probably never, ever going to see that. But
if it was a real advantage, athletes would do it. You know they would.
Yeah. Hey, look, if what's her name, Marion Jones?
Roydie Jones?
Roydie Jones.
Who would have thought she was on the juice with her boy? Her husband was a massive shot putter.
What was the guy who ran the what was his name? His name was Conti. He had a 60 Minutes interview where he admitted, is it Bill Conti? He was the guy who admitted on 60 Minutes that he saw Marion.
Victor Conti, yeah, the guy who ran the lab in San Francisco.
That's right. Victor
he
Conti
had the guy who gave the stuff to Barry Bonds.
Right. Remember how this guy described on 60 Minutes how he gave her, he watched her inject herself into her quads, and everybody laughed at him. Oh, he's a troll. He's a liar. He's a piece of trash. And then for her to turn around and finally admit it and go to jail, not one person walked up to that guy and said, oh, well, I guess you're telling the truth.
Hey, the best one was when Barry Bonds said, yeah, I just rubbed this stuff on. I didn't ask what it was.
Yeah, exactly.
Really, Barry?
Yeah, Gary Anderson gets locked up for supplying people with steroids. He's your best friend since you were kids, and you've got no knowledge of his little dealings. And yet, your head grows 2 sizes in 1 year. 2 sizes in 1 year. You went from a 7 to a 9 in the head.
Yeah.
In 1996, you were 186 pounds, dude.
Did you see the home run derby this year, how much it's costing out of those steroids in the game?
Say again?
Did you see how lousy the home run derby was this year?
Oh, man, it was awful.
They should bring steroids back. They should be mandatory in all sports.
Oh, now you're just crazy. Hey, the Real Talk Blanchers want us on the show. Are we going to get them on, JC? I guess we're about to put them on. Oh, Real Talk, yeah. Look at that. They said they want me to let you. They want to let me bring you on. Real Talk Blanchers. They want us on the air. Okay, I'm going to put you guys on hold. Let me get some comments from the folks at Real Talk Blanchers and see whether or not they JC, what's the deal?
Wow. I just got an instant message on Facebook.
Okay.
I didn't know they did what I did. They must have copied down our number from the last time that we were there.
Right.
And they look at our number on the on the switchboard.
Right.
And I just got a message from Hefe that says they won't let me bring you on. Talking about the females on the show.
The girls won't let me on?
They won't let them bring right.
Why?
He hasn't said. I'm going to ask him now.
No, I'm about to send them a message now and ask them why. They are probably scared.
Not more than likely.
They're probably scared to death.
More than likely, but he says that they will not let me bring you on.
Well, this is because they don't have any answers. And they don't have any answers to what it is that I'm going to ask them, and they know that they're ill-equipped to deal with Reese on the radio. So, all right, well, they're not responding yet. I just sent them a message that says, why? Are they scared? I said, I don't blame them. So, if they don't want to go on, that's absolutely fine. The girls never, ever want to deal with real topics, especially Miss New York. And Miss New York is probably what I consider one of the biggest scaredy cats in the world. Okay, they're messaging me back, and it says, laugh out loud.
Misinformation.
They wrote back, I am not scared. What's this next step? I'm going to write, but the ladies are scared. Okay, so Real Talk Lashes doesn't want to be a part of this show today. So, all right, I guess they don't want to be a part of it. Well, we'll talk to them for a little bit.
We're going to take our ball and go home.
Yeah, that's okay. We'll take our ball and go home. We'll take a break when we come back. There are two other topics that I need to get into real quick, and it is about these drones. This drones report that just came out hasn't been completed yet, but this drones report is frightening. Wait till you find out where these drones are. We'll be back. It's Reese on Radio. Stick around. Hey, what's up, guys? It's Reese on the radio, and you'd be stunned at some of the people who call up to spend some time with Reese on the radio. He is the godfather of entertainment, Mr. Michael Lohan. Mr. Lohan!
Reese, I have to stop laughing before we get in. I don't know how to respond to this. Am I in the Twilight Zone?
you are in the Twilight Zone. On the phone with us right now on Reese on the Radio is the connoisseur of the Hollywood biz, the father of the famed actress Lindsay Lohan. Mr. Michael Lohan is on the show on Reese on the Radio. Thank you for joining us today, sir.
No, thanks for having me, Reese. It's going to be a lot of fun, I can tell already.
Oh, man, you have no idea how much fun we're going to have today. It's Reese on the Radio, weeknights, right here on blogtalkradio.com.
Mary, Mary, why you bugging?
James, you're on the air?
Yep.
Before you say anything, you are just going to come clean right now, okay? I'd like to know the adult beverage you're enjoying.
Beverage? Yeah, I'm drinking beer.
What kind of beer are you drinking, James? Is it a 211?
Oh, man.
You're drinking a 211?
Yes.
You're drinking 211 Steel Reserve.
Right now.
The reason why it's called Steel Reserve, and it's called 211 for that matter, is that the police code, 211, means robbery in progress.
And don't let me tell you what that 211 has stolen from you tonight, my man.
It's Reese on the Radio, weeknights, right here on blogtalkradio.com.
The Obama attack machine has started, spending millions to sling mud or oil at Mitt Romney. Why? Because in the five states where Obama's attacking Romney, gas prices have roughly doubled. But Obama's mud can't cover up his failed energy policies. Policies that are hurting small businesses and working families. America deserves solutions, not attack ads covering up Obama's failures. 4 years of failed leadership are all we can afford. Send a message.
Hey
Hey guys, I'm Jordan Sparks.
I'm Chase Crawford.
Hey, what's up? It's Usher.
Hi, I'm Rachel Bilson.
I'm Hayden Christensen.
I'm Peyton Manning.
Hey, we're Fall Out Boy.
I'm Jared Archuleta.
I'm Corbin Blue.
I'm Kristen Bell.
And we're the Jonas Brothers.
And I promise you, none of these people listen to my show. But here's some people who do.
Hey, Reese.
Hey,
I don't think you're a buffoon.
Thank you, dear. George, you're Robert Reese.
Hi there, Reese.
Hello, George.
Please let me do the talking today.
George, you're going to be brief.
I respect what you said, because you know something, you're being honest.
Hey, I'm glad that you're bringing up what's most important, and that is the issues and where people stand and what they have for experience.
It's Reese on the Radio, weekdays right here on blogtalkradio.com.
Mr. Speaker, the President of the United States.
This is the real state of our union. But you won't hear stories like those at President Obama's address tonight. The unemployed don't get tickets to sit next to the First Lady. Instead tonight, the President will do what he does best. He'll give a nice speech.
The idea of America endures.
A lot of memorable phrases in it.
That our future is hopeful.
But he won't give you the hard numbers.
Our journey goes forward, and the state of our union is strong.
3 years ago, we measured candidate Obama by his hopeful promises and his slogans. Today, President Obama has amassed an actual record of debt, decline, and disappointment. I'd use the State of the Union to lay out an agenda that will get our country back on track and get our fiscal house in order. We need to nominate someone who is an experienced leader, who has the qualities of leadership, the character, the judgment, the seriousness, the sobriety, the capacity demonstrated time and time again as a leader to help guide our party at a critical time and make sure that we hold on to the House, that we capture the Senate, and that we get back the White House and restore to America what is rightfully ours. A great nation, united, free, and prosperous for our kids and for their kids. Thank you so very much.
There's Dr. Oz, there's Dr. Phil, there's Dr. Drew, there's Dr. Joy Brown. It seems like everybody's got an opinion, but I'm going to leave it to the real professionals. Call up at 347-308-8701 to give me your take. It's my problem, you deal with it. Right here on Therapy Thursdays on Reese on Radio, on blogtalkradio.com, weeknights on blogtalkradio.com.
President Barack Obama named himself one of the country's four best presidents. Better than George Washington, John F. Kennedy, and even Ronald Reagan. But Mr. President was just being modest. He's in fact America's best president at piling on debt. So good that he has managed to pile on nearly as much debt as all the previous presidents combined. All he needed was just 4 years to outspend 220 years of history. We can't afford four more years of America's best president.
Warning, the sounds you're about to hear can be devastating to your ear.
I love it, I love it, I love it, I love it, I love it.
You're listening to Reese on the Radio right here on blogtalkradio.com.
Seen James in a while. Justin's hanging out on the phone just listening in. Justin's out in Maryland. He'll get perhaps he'll have enough guts to say hello. I'm teasing him now. Justin, say hello to somebody. Just say hello.
What's up?
There you go. That's my nephew, Justin. All right, you're enjoying the show so far?
Yeah.
What's up with your signal?
There ain't nothing wrong with it.
Oh, okay. You listen to that country accent. That boy country? That boy your country.
Come on now.
You know, you got the country as voice right, but he's smart as a whip. I love the kid. He's a great kid. I can't wait to
hear
him.
Hey, Reese.
What's up?
Was that the Justin that used to come on early on when we started the show? From
no.
Bama?
Yes. That is Justin.
Oh, okay. He's no stranger to the show.
No, he is not. Justin is not a stranger. It's been a while since he's called in, but yes, that is the same Justin that
he
called in.
He was Obama ground back then.
Say again?
Stood his Obama ground back then.
Yes, he was standing his Obama ground, but you know what? He had a week to spend with Reese, and it's a wrap.
And you ruined the kid. And you ruined
I
the kid.
Him. You're damn right. There were the Hitler youth. Now there's the Reese youth.
I know. Wow.
All right. Well, thank you for checking in, Justin. We'll get back to him in a little bit. The Reese. All right, well, if that gets around, somebody's going to get angry at me. Okay, so I don't know whether or not you saw this report. I saw this earlier today, and apparently some documents through the Freedom of Information Act came out that said, I mean, literally thousands of pages about drone programs that are all over the country, a lot of them in Mississippi. I know that I've heard stories about Miami and where all of these. Now, these are only camera-held drones. Some of the drones that they're looking at, some are about as high as 10 inches, about maybe some about 2 feet wide. They fly for about 40, 45 minutes. They take camera shots of people on the streets. They're controlled by remote. There are also some claims that computer hackers can get into the drones while they're in flight. But the places that these drones are flying are what I find the most interesting. College campuses. Now see, that to me, that's intriguing. It is. Of course it's creepy. Of course it's creepy. Now, the reason why I have an issue with college campuses, everybody knows, yes, you've got those radicals on the college campus on the left and the right, and there's a bunch of people out there talking about their constitutional rights, and those people, the protesters, the career protesters, those people out there. But regular college campuses have kids who don't know anything about their personal space, their rights, their constitutional rights. So out there, and they're partying and they're having a good time and they're not caring. My question is why would anybody want to put a drone above a college campus? And so I got to thinking, which is a dangerous thing on recent radio, because when I start thinking, I'm 85% right. I'm not 100% yet, but I'm getting there. So here's the breakdown. What would these drones be used for on a college campus? What? So there were no radicals? Maybe. Maybe they were checking out what groups were forming. The glee club. The science nerds.
Right.
The jocks. The druggies. The slackers. What would we need this information for? Why would we have drones going over to campus to look at these groups? There's only one thing that those drones are trying to cover. And I know I'm right here, folks. Don't think that I'm out of my mind. The reason is three letters. S-E-X. It's sex. It is the largest and the most rampant crime on college campuses. Date rape. With the exception of school shootings. But it's about sex. The most people who are The people on campuses, of course, who were preyed upon the most are college females. At least according to the statistic. I mean, they don't want to know who's streaking through the quad. They want to know who the predators are. People coming on the campus and going after these young women. Huh?
They are the predators.
Well, they might be the predators per se because they're the ones that are flying over the school campus with these cameras. But remember, they're not putting weapons on them. They're just cameras on there. Why would anybody allow them to be on these college campuses? I couldn't think of any. We don't want to know whether or not somebody's buying weed. We know that's happening. We don't need to know who's supplying beer at the kegger. Why would you be spending those exorbitant amounts of money for that kind of silliness? The only reason it could be is for sex. Because campuses can't control that environment. They can't control who is doing who or whom. And you get what I mean. But they can't control it. But is it a violation? Or is this the best protection for these kids? I'm somewhat down the middle on this one. Because the campus police, they don't seem to always be around. I lived in Boston. It's a college town. I see the damn campus police officers at the 7-Eleven more than I see them patrolling the campus. They roll around like they're regular police officers. Boston University Police. Boston College Police. I lived right in between both campuses. Right on Commonwealth Boulevard. Or Commonwealth Avenue. I can't remember. So I know it's Commonwealth. And I never saw those guys on the campus. They were just driving around like they were regular cops. And late night, where were they hanging out? Everybody's, you know, leaving campus to go to the local bars. So those drones, they're there to protect those girls. Well, at least that's their reasoning. They're not going to tell anything that, but I'm positive that that's the case. There could be no other reasoning, unless somebody can tell me something else. We know what biggest problem on college campuses is date rape. Or just all-out rape. And something's got to be done to curtail it. You know how the police department works. They're reactionary. There's no proactiveness. They think this is proactive, but this is all reaction. Can't have a cop there all the time. Maybe you can't put cameras around all the time. Cameras are too expensive. So police officers buy one little drone, maybe two, fly it over the campus, over the quad. And there's Becky and John. All right, they didn't look like they're getting along. Why is John running? He's running from her. No, but you get my point. We'll go to the guys and see whether or not I'm out of my mind. Mike, I can't be crazy. Edward, I can't be crazy.
Well, I don't think that they are there to. I don't think they're there to protect the women at all. I think that's the premise they're putting out there, or they may put out there. Just like, however, when somebody wants a law passed, they'll say, oh, it's for the children. So they may put it out there that, oh, this is for the protection of the women. And if someone, you know, goes against them and says, hey, we don't want these drones up there, they'll say, hey, then I guess you're for rape, right? You want women to get attacked.
Yeah, exactly. That would be their argument. You're absolutely right. That will be their argument. You know, I always go back to that John Biden comment of a speech he was giving where he was saying, I forget the particular law that he didn't want repealed, and he said that if we don't reelect, I guess it was some guy running for office, I think it was something about that, but he was saying that if we don't do this particular thing, that rapes and murder were going to skyrocket. I don't know if you remember that, that some sort of gaffe he got called on.
Yeah, I remember that.
Well, I totally agree with Edward. This is just the incrementalization of the nanny Big Brother state. And what better test bed to use it in than a college campus where kids are already indoctrinated?
So you're saying that, in other words, right, these kids would probably lean towards this whole ideology. They've already been indoctrinated of this sort of leftist ideal.
These are the same kids that, like, Google is going to push the Google Wallet idea on, where you don't have to carry money or a credit card. You just use your cell phone.
Right.
And these kids are, I know college kids and, like, college geeks especially, and they were gung-ho for that idea. Like, great, I don't have to carry my wallet. But, you know, when you don't have your wallet or cash or even a card, everything's dependent on your cell phone. That gives too many people too much power over your freedom.
Yeah.
And I don't think these kids look at things from a freedom standpoint.
You know, Mike, it's so funny you say that, because when I was growing up and the debit card became very, very popular, which I use now, but it took me a long time to really condition myself into doing it. It was really a tough fight. I wouldn't even have a bank account for reasons exactly like that. In my 20s and early 30s, I was so against the whole bank account thing.
I did the same thing, man, and I always have cash. And I use my debit card, but I've always got $100 on me.
It was something that I grew up with. I just grew up with, like, my grandfather having cash on him. I may call it old school. I just thought it was just that, for me, that was traditional. And then I get this big argument. You know, the girl I was dating at the time, I got this big argument. I lost a wad of money. Okay? Hey, it happens. You know? But that was what made me convert. See, if you just lost your bank card, you could just cut the bank card off and nobody would rob you. And I just kind of thought about it and said, all right, fine, you made a strong argument. You know, I finally gave in. That's what made me do it.
Yeah, until there's a power outage and you need to get something purchased, then you're screwed.
Yeah, right, exactly. Then you're SOL.
Or the phone lines go down or whatever. You know, it happens. I mean, look, I never leave home without three things, okay? A wad of money, a gun, and a pocket knife, because you never know when you're going to need any of those.
You said a wad of money, a gun, and a pocket knife?
Yep.
You need the pocket knife for what?
I use the pocket knife all the time. Open
for
packages
what?
And stuff. Yeah, open a box, open a letter, you know, cut
you
a string.
I do the same thing, except, Mike, I carry a multi-tool.
Well, you see, I don't need the leather, man. I have a nice little automatic knife. See, in Florida, we can carry what they call an automatic knife if you have a concealed carry permit. So it's a switchblade, which is so much more convenient than a regular knife. I think it's stupid that my 3-inch bladed pocket knife is a switchblade. You know what I mean?
So you have a switchblade?
Well, it's called an automatic knife. And, man, it makes sense. It's stupid that they ban them, because these new folding knives that have a thumb stud on them, they got a spring assist on those anyway. So they open almost as fast as my pocket knife, my switchblade.
To go a little off topic, do you guys have a rule in Florida about how many inches they have to be, like 4 fingers or that, like in New York?
Regular people, it has to be like 3.5 inches or no longer than 3.5 inches. But if you have a concealed carry permit in Florida, you can carry any knife you want.
Wow.
You can carry one of those big Paul Hogan Crocodile Dundee blades if you want. Believe it or not, man, if you have a concealed carry permit and you have a Class 3 firearms license, you can carry a sawed-off shotgun underneath your trench coat if you wish.
Wow.
My state kicks ass.
Well, yeah, it does. I will give it that.
My state rocks. It's where you don't rob internet cafes down here.
Right. Derek the Bounty Hunter.
In Connecticut.
Derek the Bounty Hunter called me earlier today talking about how easy it is to get a gun, you know, with a background check. He's really proud of that.
The concealed carry permit system here is great, man. You pass your test and get fingerprinted, and they have to give you one in 90 days if you pass the test.
Mike, what's the test like?
I had some classroom time, and I had to shoot. And then you have to fill out a background check by the state. You get fingerprinted. It was really easy. I mean, it wasn't like I just went in and signed some paper. I mean, I had to sit in class for 6 hours or something. But you know, I was in the military and my dad was a cop, so I wasn't exactly a newbie to shooting.
Right. Okay. Wow. Another topic. Anybody hear about this George Lopez HBO show?
Oh, Jesus, yes.
Who cares?
Okay. Well, do you know that Sheriff Joe Arpaio has responded?
Not to step on you real quick, but you need to check out Drudge right now, sir.
I do?
Yes, right now.
I'm on it. All right, go on the Drudge Report. Oh, no.
Yep.
All right, this just in from Drudge Report. Yahoo News is actually in the link, Drudge Report. Arpaio says Obama birth record definitely fraudulent. Investigators from Arizona Sheriff's Office declared President Barack Obama's birth certificate is definitely fraudulent. Members of the Maricopa County Sheriff Joe Arpaio's posse said in March that there was probable cause that Obama's long-form birth certificate, released by the White House in April of 2011, was a computer-generated forgery. Come on, computer, you have to.
Now Arpaio says investigators are positive.
Yeah, they're okay. Now, if this is going to create a problem. According to the story, it says Mike Zullo, the posse's chief investigator, said numeric codes on certain parts of the birth certificate indicate that those parts weren't filled out, yet those sections asking for the race of Obama's father and his field of work or study were completed. Zullo said investigators previously didn't know the meaning of the codes, but that the codes were explained by a 95-year-old former state worker who signed the president's birth certificate. Zullo said a news reporter who had helped out in the probe let investigators listen in on an interview he concluded with the former state worker. The Obama campaign has declined to comment on Arpaio's allegations. The Arizona Democratic Party says in a statement that Arpaio's investigation was intended to draw attention away from the problems within his own agency, such as hundreds of sex crimes cases that the sheriff's office failed to adequately investigate over a three-year period. So-called birthers maintain Obama is ineligible to be president because they contend that he was born in Kenya. Hawaii officials have repeatedly confirmed Obama's citizenship. Obama released a copy of the long-form birth certificate in an attempt to quell citizenship questions. Courts have rebuffed lawsuits over the issue.
Which one of them is actually wagging a dog?
Well, I don't know. Arpaio has, if he has the proof, and based on the investigator that we played his audio on the air some months ago, who said that a scanned document cannot be removed electronically. Segments of the document on a scan you could remove from the document.
Well, I mean, I could do that myself. You give me any PDF form, I could change any information on it and give it back to you and make it can look original. I mean,
I'm reading a story on WorldNet Daily, and it says here that under Hawaii revised statute 338-17.8, a person only has to be an established resident of Hawaii, not necessarily U.S. citizen, and pay taxes there for 1 year to register for an out-of-state or foreign-born person with an official Hawaii birth certificate. So it's looking like he probably got the foreign-born Hawaii birth certificate, and they altered it. And I'll tell you what makes you think so. If you look at the birth certificate, under his race, for his father's race, they put African-American. But when he was born, nobody used the term African-American.
No, they did not.
People were black or Negro.
That's right.
That's
we're
absolutely
talking about
right.
1961 here.
Yep. African-American didn't come in until what?
70s.
So
70s,
I think
late 80s.
I think
where,
they're going to hang him on this
find, one. Where can I find an actual copy of the PDF that was released?
Oh, gosh. You got me, buddy.
You can go to the White House website. That was the whole argument that Arpaio made when that private investigator had that interview in Phoenix, he had that interview with the news reporter that we played the audio of. He said that when they investigated, they said all they did was take the document from the White House website, and when they scanned over it, when they used their own document that they put on a website, there were sections of the long-form birth certificate that they could literally pull away from the document. You're not supposed to be able to do that from a scanned picture. It's, in essence, it's a scanned document. You can't pull pieces of a document out. In other words, he was saying that whoever generated this long form generated it on a computer. It wasn't a scanned document.
Hey, Reese. Let me bring you back for one moment. Hold on, everyone. Let me bring Reese back for a moment. Reese, remember when I did the Storm Buckwell DVD cover?
Right.
And remember, I sent Star the image, and he kept asking me for the individual sections. He told me that the guy needed it in layers.
Right. He wanted it layered so that they can change it or digitize it in some sort of way. Right.
That's basically what they're saying. And
but,
so I had to go ahead and break down the layers and then send that back to him.
Right, but see that's because did you do that picture on Photoshop?
I did it on a program that's very similar. I did it on Jazz Paintshop Pro, where you put your images together like that, and you put it in layers. But usually when you finish a document like that, you have to merge all the layers. You can either merge layers invisible. What's visible, or you can merge them flat.
Right.
It sounds like they forgot to merge those layers flat before releasing it.
Ooh. Hey, this is really good. On the WorldNet Daily site,
Edwin, correct me if I'm wrong.
No, that's absolutely right. That's what I was going to mention, that, you know, you can scan even a birth certificate or any document in layers, and, you know, you can remove pieces from it, depending on how it was scanned.
Right.
What were you saying, Mike? Go ahead. What is WorldNet Daily report?
On the WorldNet Daily site, there's a copy or a picture of the upper right corner of the birth certificate, and it says you can see handwritten number 9 in the slot that says name of father, kind of residence or industry, and race of mother. And it says number 9 was written when those things were not filled in, and that proof the document had been tampered with.
Really?
And then they put down the race of father as African, but you wouldn't put down his race as African.
It would be Kenyan.
Or it would be black. If they're asking for a race. Yeah, they didn't ask for a nationality. They would have put black or Negro, unless Hawaii called all black people Africans.
Well, you know, the best way to look at that is that you would have to look up all of the birth certificates of anyone who was black during the year of 1961 and see what they wrote.
And see if they put down African. I'll bet they didn't.
I mean, that would pretty much be the breakdown right there.
Is that all kinds of inconsistencies. That the Deputy Attorney General for Hawaii says the state has a birth document on file, but she would not confirm it was the same one that the White House has. And I'm sure she's a Democrat.
Probably.
It says investigators were troubled to find key information missing on the verification document Hawaii gave to Arizona Secretary of State. I'm surprised Sheriff Arpaio's not dead.
Well, the fact that he's calling this a national security threat, that's a big deal.
I think Mitt Romney should name him his VP candidate.
Yeah, handwritten.
No, I might write Sheriff Joe in for president. Are you kidding me?
But I'm reading this part. In fact, let me stop this. I want to. It says after. What is it? Yeah, the number 9 thing. I'm looking at now. I'm looking at a close version of it. Says race of father African, and then they wrote the number 9, and then university again. They wrote the number 9, and then it says race of mother Caucasian, and there's a number 1. Now explain to me the significance of that.
It says right next to that they only put 9 on the form when that was left blank. At the time the form was generated. So they're saying it proves that it was added later.
Oh, can you see right now some of the fields of usual occupation, kind of business or industry, the race and father on Obama's document, each of those fields are filled with information. This proves the document has been tampered with and information has been placed on it. Sheriff investigators tracked down the registrar who allegedly signed the White House birth document, UK Lee, who's now 95. Okay, and this is the story that I guess they listened in on the phone conversation. Wow. Well, for it to be the top of Drudge Report, you know it's going to create some stories for tomorrow morning.
Yeah. 4 million hits a day or whatever he gets? Yeah.
I'd like
to get a look at this document, though, myself.
Yeah, I think it just has to be further investigated. This is a big deal. I want to see what anybody else is saying about this or if anybody's even going to bother to cover it. Well, you know what they're going to do. I'll tell you where the swing is going to happen tomorrow. If this gets any traction, they're going to go directly to Mitt Romney and ask him whether or not he believes that the president was born in the United States. That's the way they're going to have to spin it. They're going to ask him whether or not he's going to denounce Joe Arpaio and his investigation. It's the only thing that they can do is make this a Romney issue, if, in fact, anybody jumps on it.
And I think the response is, I don't know. You know?
Well,
I'm not certain.
I don't know. This is where they put him in that John McCain situation, you know? When John McCain had to tell that older woman, you know, when she said that I think that he's Muslim, and he said, no, he's not. And, you know, John McCain is at the NAACP talking about how Obama's a great individual and his, you know, everything that he did, you know, he's accomplished is great for African-American people, sealing his fate. That's what they're going to try to do now.
Well, I have no doubt that he's got some Muslim leanings. He went to Muslim school in Indonesia, for God's sake. And he went to a school that you didn't go to if you weren't Muslim, apparently.
Hey, I look at it this way. According to the reports, his mother had him just, what, a couple of weeks before her birthday? I mean, you know what? JC, for tomorrow's show, let's get some background on Obama's mother. It's when she was born, and I know Barack Obama's birthday is August 4th, 1961. So let's see if we can get the exact timeline. Because I want to bring up an interesting thing that I brought up back in 2008 about that I think is very interesting. And I'm almost certain this theory turns out to be true. That, you know, indeed, if he was born outside of the scope of where it is that I'm going, if he was born just before her 18th birthday, I think that there's something really, really important that we need to discuss. But we'll look over this, guys, tomorrow. That'll be our top story tomorrow.
Tell you what, Google the name Frank Marshall Davis for your homework, okay?
Okay, I will. Okay, so Frank Marshall Davis, I'll look that up right now. Thank you, of course, Mike, and I appreciate that update. That's a news flash if I ever heard one. That's our show for today, guys. We've got to get out of here. It is past our time. We will see you tomorrow, as usual. It is Reese on the Radio. We love you. We'll see you tomorrow.